Zoom a little zoom in a rocket ship. Off we go on a trip. Heading for the moon at a rocket clip. We're gonna zoom, zoom, rocket. Zoom a little zoom, now we're almost free from the Earth's gravity. Zoom into the moon at terrific speed, because there is no friction. Soon we'll see if the moon is made out of green cheese. Ha, 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 ha. Zoom, we're here at the moon. Let's see what the moon is
like. Oh, hi, everyone. Oh, welcome to my science project on CITR 101.9 FM. Oof. Wow, it's Thursday. It's the end of another week. I don't know about you guys, but all of this back to school, Labor Day, start of a new year, shenanigans is really tuckering me out. So much so that I thought that today's show could be all about the science of yawning. Back when I lived in Vancouver, I was on, it was like the number 40 Express. Anyway, I was going back to UBC, and there's a guy on the bus who I just didn't like. Something about him really rubbed me the wrong way, and he did this really big yawn. And I didn't yawn at all. I had absolutely no inclination to yawn in response to this guy's yawn. This guy who I really, for whatever reason, didn't think was such a great character. And that sort of got me thinking, too. And I was like, well, usually yawning is contagious, but maybe you have to have an empathy, or you have to have a like for the person who's yawning. And that got me thinking about, we yawn when we're tired, and when we sleep we're vulnerable, and maybe yawning was some kind of a symbol or a signal to figure out who around us would yawn empathetically. And if they did, then maybe you all liked each other and you'd all trust each other in your sleep. But if someone didn't yawn, then maybe they weren't so trustworthy. Maybe you didn't want to be sleeping in the same space as this person who did not yawn. There's a lot in the literature about yawning, so we're going to talk about a really shocking range, surprising range of reasons why human beings and other animals yawn. And we're, of course, going to enjoy a smattering of yawn themed music in between our yawn science stories. I also came across some rather amusing and interesting websites that I will share with you as well. And I suppose we can conduct our own radio science experiment throughout this entire next hour, and we can see just how often, you know, you yawn in response to me and the yawns that I will be playing for you. In fact, maybe if you're operating heavy machinery or fast vehicles, maybe you want to wait and download this as a podcast, you know, so you're not yawning up a storm on the road or something like that. But anyway, it's great to be back. I've missed being on the air in a relative sense. This is all pre-recorded. For the last month, really, it's been quite a blast. I was in Paris at a vertebrate morphology conference, and then in London, and then in Toronto, and back in Calgary, and back at work. So it's a bit of a culture shock being back in town. And just as I said, though, I'm grateful to be back at the boards doing the show. And I don't know if you notice, but I bought myself a spiffy new microphone. Dear listeners, I've appreciated that the quality of my voice recording seems to have gotten worse over the months, and finally I think my mic just bit the dust, and I thought, well, it's a great opportunity to try and upgrade and make things a bit more sweet for your ears. If you want to get in touch with either my co-host, Anne, or myself, and I am your host, Julia, you can email either of us at the email address that goes myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. And again, that's myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. www.ncbc.ca. And when Anne is in the booth live, as opposed to me, who does the show and uploads it from one province east, you can call in at 822-2487 or UBC-CITR. So now that I've bored all of you with my diatribe, boredom, of course, being one of the causes of yawning that we will explore, let's leap into it, shall we? This is my science project, The Yawning Show. Finished listening to I'm Bored by Iggy Pop, and welcome back to my science project. Today's show is a real yawn. Waka waka waka. Yes, indeed, folks. We're talking about the science of yawning today, and I thought it quite appropriate to start off by discussing what exactly is the scientific definition of a yawn. Well, let me tell you, there are several articles out there that all offer the same or really similar definition of what yawning is. And essentially this boils down to, and I quote, a stereotyped and often repetitive motor act characterized by gaping of the mouth, accompanied by a long inspiration, a brief acme, or peak. If we think about acme in terms of Warner Brothers speak, it is the pinnacle of something, followed by a short expiration. This physiological act of yawning is semi-voluntary. In other words, you can do it when you want to yawn, but you can also be compelled to yawn for the reasons that we'll talk about later in the show. The morphology or the appearance of yawning is common amongst almost all vertebrates, and I expect that the qualifier almost in there is simply because people haven't studied all vertebrates on the planet, so it can't be a blanket statement, but essentially mammals, birds, reptiles, and fish all yawn. In humans, Yawning has been observed as early as the 12th week in utero in the fetus, and the act of yawning itself remains very little changed for the rest of your natural human life. During development, babies yawn a lot. A 2005 paper published in the Journal of Prenatal Medicine found that fetal yawning occurred 1 to 6 times per half hour based on a sample of about 100 pregnant women. So that's what a yawn is, but what makes a yawn happen? What is the physiology of the yawn? Well, the physiology of yawning is not that well understood, but some advances in this area have been made in the last few years. In fact, it seems there's been a burgeoning of literature about why and how we yawn of late. Yawning is linked to various receptors in the brain for a range of different molecules. So there's lots of different things that tweak brain receptors to make you yawn. And amongst these are neurotransmitters such as serotonin, or the happy chemical, that goes off course in people who suffer depression, for example. And I think chocolate consumption also increases your serotonin levels. And in addition to neurotransmitters, sex hormones also influence yawning. So maybe the next time your partner yawns at you, you should take it as a compliment. Yawning is known to be strongly affected by dopamine, which has many functions in the brain. It's another neurotransmitter. And these functions include important roles in behavior and cognition, motor activity, motivation and reward, sleep, mood, attention, and learning. So at least a few of those also are involved in doing a yawn. One paper in the journal Sleep Medicine Reviews explains that dopamine initiates a cascade of reactions that start in the hypothalamus of the brain, and then this cascade moves to other brain areas, and it ultimately results in muscle stimulus that leads to a yawn. A Canadian study on dopamine and yawning out of the Douglas Hospital Research Center, this was published in 2000 in Neuropsychobiology, found that injections of a chemical that increased dopamine levels in the brain was more effective at increasing the frequency of yawning when injected in the morning versus injections in the afternoon. The paper suggested that this difference in response and frequency of yawning was caused by daily fluctuations in the levels in the sensitivity of the dopamine receptor. So we have a complex story here of neuroreceptors and other chemicals in the brain that somehow trigger some sort of emotional and motor muscular response to stimulus that, you know, we'll talk about a bit later, that ultimately produce a yawn. So the next thing to talk about in the science of yawning is, of course, why do we yawn? And there seems to be a veritable panoply of reasons for why we, at least as human beings, yawn. These range from being, as I mentioned earlier, and Iggy helped us highlight, being bored. Interestingly, being aroused, which could have to do with the sex hormones, being hungry, being stressed, and lack of oxygen. Even pharmaceutical drug use, which we'll touch on later, has an effect on causing yawns. And perhaps the first answer that any of us would suggest we yawn is because we're tired.
I stroll along and help poor people to sleep. If you just can't sleep, and your tired as could be. There's a remedy, it's the yawning melody. If you yawn, 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 then you sleep, sleep, sleep till the dawn, 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 so little yawn.
Called The Yawning Man from the Tom Thumb animated film score. Film that I haven't seen, and after listening to that particular excerpt, I don't know if I ever want to. Today on the show, we just finished talking about the scientific definition and physiology of a yawn, and we ended with a teaser about why exactly it is that we yawn. To complement this discussion, I've got my very soporific elevator music going on in the background, because the next thing we're going to talk about, yeah, you guessed it, is yawning and sleep. The literature says that yawning and stretching, which often are things that we do together, act to wake us up, basically by reversing what's called the muscular atonia of REM sleep, so I guess kind of sleepy muscles. And REM sleep is, of course, as I'm sure you know, something that stands for rapid eye movement, and it's characteristic of the normal sleep phase that recurs throughout the night. And REM actually decreases with age and frequency, and it's associated with dreaming. This effect of yawning and stretching to reverse this muscular sleepiness acts to wake up the muscles and also reopen the airways, which have, according to a paper by a scientist named Valunchinsky, published in 2006 in the journal Medical Hypothesis, collapsed to some degree during sleep. So there's some sort of a constriction of your airways and sleepiness of your muscles that yawning and stretching reverses so that you can wake up and be happy and active. Now, yawning also serves to stimulate specific areas of the brain that ultimately result in what yawn scientists deem increased vigor and arousal. On a slightly different tack, and weirdly enough, a 2003 study that I found observed that anesthetized and freely breathing rats were stimulated to yawn using lights, which is sort of counterintuitive, because you think if you put the rats in the dark, they'd start yawning, but no. Now, a lot of us already know, either firsthand or from older relatives and friends that we have, that sleep during the night changes as we age, and generally we sleep less as we get older. And I just mentioned a few minutes ago that REM sleep actually decreases with age as well in humans. Now, yawning behavior also changes with age, and studies by the same fellow Valunchinsky have shown that with the age-related decrease in REM sleep, frequency of yawning also decreases. Now, this yawning decrease in the elderly is also associated with a decreased activity related to the neurotransmitter dopamine, which we learned earlier is a key player in the mechanism of yawning, as far as it's understood at the moment. Interestingly, too, yawning is also associated with some age-related diseases, and yawning and disease is a topic that I'll touch on towards the end of the show. One idea about yawning that's sleep-related is that yawning increases intake of oxygen, hence the waking up of the brain and perhaps muscles, by that same token. This idea was first hypothesized in the 1960s by Ashley Montague, who was a British anthropologist and a humanist who popularized issues such as race and gender and their relation to politics and development. And this hypothesis that you yawn to increase the oxygen flow is probably one of the most well-known, if not the best-known, ideas about why it is that we yawn. To date, this link between air and yawning increase is actually unproven.
an MRI, or magnetic resonance imaging, brain study of people who yawned in response to videos they were shown of other people yawning, found a significant increase in blood oxygen level. So this is supporting Ashley Montague's original hypothesis. However, it wasn't stated whether or not this increase is enough to help you be more alert in practical terms, and it's possible that it is a byproduct of an act, which is yawning, performed for another reason. So, okay, maybe yawning does increase your oxygen levels in the blood, but is that really the reason you do it? Or is that just sort of an added bonus? Other work has found absolutely no link between high carbon dioxide or low oxygen blood levels, so that doesn't support this idea. Another recently proposed theory is that yawning acts to bring cooler air into the mouth with subsequently a cooling effect on the brain to make you more alert. Now, this study was published actually just earlier this summer by psychologists at the University of Albany in New York, and they studied 44 students and based on this concluded that yawning sent cooler air to the brain, helping it to stay alert. Therefore, according to these scientists and their study, which was published earlier this summer in Evolutionary Psychology, yawning delays sleep rather than promotes it. Now, getting back to yawning and sleepiness, yawning seems to coincide with, as one 2003 paper puts it, quote, changes in personal situation and activity. I think the crux of any study or radio show about yawning has to be about the contagious nature of this act. Why is yawning contagious? Apparently, the onset of a yawn is triggered by seeing, hearing, reading, or even thinking about another person, or maybe even another animal, yawn. What underlies contagious yawning is not yet known. The MRI study of the brain during yawning that I just mentioned traced the act of yawning to activity in parts of the brain that are associated with involuntary behavior rather than deliberate motor activities, which all means that you yawn involuntarily and not because you choose to mimic the first yawner. In fact, a 2003 paper published in the European Journal of Neurology reported that a small group of patients suffering from paralysis of the arm were still capable of stretching the affected arm during a yawn, but at no other time did they move the arm, or could they voluntarily do this. So this suggests that this whole complex of yawning and stretching is really hardwired in for some apparent particular reason. However, recently there have been links between contagious yawning and something that's called self-processing, that is, the role of self-awareness and mental state. Essentially, this idea boils down to a sense of self and a sense of other people, which we would call, basically, empathy. For example, a 2005 paper in the somewhat repetitively titled journal Brain Research, Cognitive Brain Research, supports this idea that empathy somehow is tied into this contagious yawning. Surprisingly, the BBC reports that only about half of adult humans are prone to contagious yawning, which is perhaps another sort of radio experiment we could be doing. If in fact you find that you are not yawning in response to all this talking, thinking, and listening about yawning, you could be perfectly normal, and you could even do an informal census of all your friends to see how many of them actually contagiously yawn. There's another idea that goes into why we yawn, or another suite of ideas, really, and this is the psychological/emotional and evolutionary founding for yawning, at least in human beings. One paper published in 2000 in a journal called Reviews de Neurophysiologie, it's a French paper, but the abstract was in English, states that Charles Darwin would have said that yawning was a useless piece of physiology. Now, whether that's true or not, Darwin did in fact speculate on the cause of the yawn and suggested that yawning had some kind of emotional basis, which of course could track back into our capacity for empathy. Which brings up an interesting issue. If you look at sociopaths or people who are very unsocialized, I'm curious to know if these people actually yawn contagiously as well. Do they fit into that 50% of adult humans who do not yawn in response to other people? But that tangent aside, yawning is meant to increase vigilance in this theory and to alert one to one's own or maybe other people's drowsiness. Although by far not the only paper to suggest this idea, a 2005 study in the multisyllabic journal Laryngorhinitology suggests that yawning may have an important role in social communication. A 2003 paper that I referred to earlier, which is simply called Yawning, in the journal Medicina of Buenos Aires, which talked about change in behavior and activity, went so far as to say that this aspect of yawning, this sort of social communication, is exclusive to humans and as such is an adaptive surveillance reflex that has evolved in our species in order to better protect a social group and to encourage close social cohesion in this group. Earlier this summer, the BBC reported that scientists at the University of Albany in New York, and this relates back to the study about cooling of the brain by yawning, these scientists reported that contagious yawning is triggered by empathetic mechanisms which function to maintain group vigilance. The BBC says that this belief is further supported by the observation of the University of Maryland's Dr. Robert Provine that paratroopers report yawning before jumping. However, based on links found between yawning and stress, which we'll touch on later in the show, perhaps tension is really the cause of paratrooper yawning if they are indeed about to jump out of an airplane from a great height. It's also been suggested that contagious yawning could be a result of an unconscious herding behavior, a subtle way to communicate to those around us, similar to when flocks of birds take flight at the same time, which could be back to the paratroopers. In a similar vein, another theory suggests contagious yawning might have helped early humans communicate their alertness levels and coordinate sleeping times. I gather this never worked with small children. Basically, if one decided it was time to sleep, they would tell the others by yawning, and they would do it in return to show that they agreed that this was indeed a good time for some sleepy-bye.
Hey, this is Steve Nash. You're listening to CITR 101.9, the home of the UBC Thunderbirds.
This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I shit.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friend with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electro-pop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic. Brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense, and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow across it, and we're making it like a we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like it. We're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville.
You know, you can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
Thank you.
Welcome back to my science project on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Julia, and today's show is all about the science of yawning. We just listened to the very calm and relaxing guitar concerto in A minor for guitar, strings, and continuo by Antonio Vivaldi. And here's a bit of trivia before we leap into our next bit. Apparently in Hindu circles, yawning is considered a religious offense. If you have any Hindu friends or relations, or if you're Hindu yourself, that'd be interesting to know for sure if that's true, and why. So on today's show, we've talked about various reasons why we yawn, particularly why yawning is contagious. And if you've missed any of the show, or for some reason, if you want to listen to it again, perhaps due to excessive yawning or napping throughout, you can access our podcasts. Both Anne and I log our shows for you on the CITR website, which is citr.ca. Go to podcasts, then talk, and then my science project. Be happily waiting for you. I mentioned earlier, a little tease, that yawning is also associated with disease. So let's talk about that, shall we? In fact, a lack or low frequency of yawning is linked with schizophrenia and other mental disorders that compromise a person's ability to empathize. Yawning has been linked as a symptom, although not ever, that I have read, a cause of various illnesses. A study that was published in 2001 in the journal Cephalalgia reported that compulsive yawning was a premonitory symptom of migraines. In other words, if you started yawning a lot, you had a really bad headache on the way. Yawning, interestingly, is used to help treat Parkinson's patients, which is a motor neuron disease. And in fact, yawning is associated with many different neurological diseases, including epilepsy, hypophyseal tumor, and stroke. There are links between yawning and heart diseases, including one case of a malignant pericardial effusion, which is the abnormal accumulation of fluid in the pericardial cavity surrounding the heart, where immediately after the drainage of this effusion, the patient's repetitive yawning completely disappeared. Earlier I mentioned yawning as an outcome of drug use, and in fact, some drug abuse. Higher doses of long-term, that is, 8 weeks or more, use of prescribed drugs to treat depression and anxiety have caused, quote, excessive daytime yawning that disappeared hours after the drug dosage was reduced. So, interesting. Yawning has some kind of association with pathology and when things go wrong. And I suppose if there is a link between yawning and emotional and psychological and motor activities, then why not? Now, yawning, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is something that's found in almost every animal that's been studied to date, every vertebrate animal at least, of which we are one. And so I thought it would be nice to talk about yawning in animals, other than us. So it's not only us who seem to yawn due to empathy, and particularly, even though one study that I came across said this was true. Apparently, it is not only humans who seem to yawn due to empathy with others. Work published in the 2004 Proceedings of Biological Science put a small group of female chimpanzees, it was a group of six, to the yawning empathy test. They showed these chimps two different videos, one of other chimps who were doing genuine yawns, and another of chimps with open mouth but non-yawning expressions. The upshot of this was that two of the six chimps shown the videos showed an increased frequency of yawning in response to the yawning video only, and no chimps at all yawned more in response to the open mouth tape. So in other words, genuine yawns did trigger a yawn in two of the six chimps, but fake yawns, nada. The implications here are not rocket science. For anyone who's studied or interacted with great apes, in fact, this study suggests that, like us, our closest non-human primate relations share with us advanced self-awareness, and the capacity to empathize, which is important in terms of what we do with these animals and how they're protected in the wild. Now, this being my science project, I cannot resist telling a monkey story about yawning. The first documented study of contagious yawning in monkeys was published just last year in Biology Letters. Like the chimps, a group of macaques was shown real yawn and fake yawn control videos of other macaques. As a group, as a test group, these macaques yawned more frequently both during and just after viewing the real yawn tape compared to the control video. Like we talked about a bit earlier regarding yawning and stress, the monkeys also scratched themselves more. It didn't say where, but they scratched themselves more in association with the yawn tape, which may have caused the macaques some tension. So in this case, yawning and tension and scratching are all combined. A similar scratching result was also found in a 2006 study that looked at how macaques with histories of self-injury also scratched themselves more in conjunction with increased yawning when housed under more stressful conditions, basically when they were housed indoors, which was more stressful as opposed to being housed outdoors. And still speaking of stress and animals, a study of the commonly used lab rat found that, in some experimental cases, yawning increased in response to a controlled exposure to stress. Now, this study, from my standpoint, was not terribly conclusive, but it still presented evidence of a link between yawning and tension. And in fact, in certain situations, I nicked this one off the BBC, dogs apparently yawn in order to stay calm, again suggesting a link between yawning and stress, says someone named Turid Rudgas, author of the book On Talking Terms with Dogs. Yeah, interesting. You got family pets at home? There's another experiment for you. Check out how they yawn. Stress them out. See if they yawn a lot. This is Yawn, Yawn, Yawn by Les Savi Fav.
Get lucky with a dead bike on the left. One day in El Paso, the cops go into the crowd under a glaring bladder of light, and the music is so loud, and the tourists take the t-shirts off. The busload of kids gives you the finger. Afternoon when the sidewalks hard and the shadows too chilly to linger. What has damaged goods and ugly trends? Has the straw man making a purchase? Downtown where the river bends, they're just waiting for you to resurface. Take a look at this photograph. Clearly his teeth were bad. He could have been yawning or snarling. The story was never clear. The cops go into the crowd under a throbbing bladder of light, and the music is just so loud, and the tourists turn the TVs off, and a bat sees a bug with the sound of a linger. Shadows call, and you chill to the tips of your fingers. Walk past damaged goods and ugly trends, past those straw men making a purchase. Downtown where the river bends, they're just waiting for you to resurface. Take a look at this photograph. Clearly his teeth were bare. He could have been yawning or snarling. This could have been anywhere. Take a look at this photograph. Clearly his teeth were there. He could have been yawning or smiling. The story was never clear.
And we're back to my science project. That was the song Yawning or Snarling by the Tragically Hip. Perhaps I could see why those two facial expressions would be confused. And before that, we had Les Savifaves with Yawn, Yawn, Yawn. And earlier on the show, I teased you with the idea that I would share with you some websites about yawning. I didn't think there would be some, but there are. And actually, one of the ones that I found when I Googled yawning was, it was interesting. It's www.omninerd.com. And they posted an article, a fairly lengthy one, about Mythbusters, which is, of course, is the show with hosts Jamie and Adam, where they go and they test out various myths in a scientific way. And this was a show that tested the myth that yawning is contagious, which, of course, is very salient to this show, because throughout the show we've assumed that yawning is indeed contagious, that you don't just yawn at random when someone else yawns, that there's actually a causative effect. So what they did in a nutshell was they tested this by putting people in front of a mirror that was a two-way mirror, and they either seeded the yawn by kind of suggesting the yawning to the person and then seeing what they would do, or they left them totally alone and let them sit in this booth with the mirror. And they left them in this booth on their own long enough to basically bore themselves. So basically people sat in this room with this two-way mirror being observed, and one group had an experimental attendee yawn in their presence to try and seed a yawn, whereas the other group sat in this room, again being watched through the two-way mirror, and no one came in at all, so they never had this yawn seeding. So the idea was that if this yawn was sort of picked up by the other person, they would yawn contagiously, and that this group would have a statistically higher frequency of yawning than the group that just sat in the room with the two-way mirror and wasn't quote-unquote seeded or otherwise sort of subliminally influenced to yawn. Now, the reason that this article has been posted on OmniNerd is that the sample size was about 50 people, and there was a difference in, I think, about 4% of the people who, I think it was 25% yawned of those not given the yawn seed, and 29% yawned of those given the yawn seed. So you can tell that the percentages here are really slight, the differences are slight, but the Mythbusters decided to sort of do some statistical finagling and concluded, based on these numbers, that in fact yawning was contagious and their result was statistically significant. So if you're interested in this whole exchange, OmniNerd really takes them to town, and if you are into your stats, you'll probably love it, because there's a huge breakdown of how OmniNerd believes Jamie and Adam had very erroneous statistical assumptions about all of this, and that how, in fact, although they said they proved that yawning is contagious, their stats are the reverse, and that, in fact, their study proves nothing. But I think it's important to note that although this study doesn't prove that yawning is contagious, it doesn't disprove it either. So it's not like what Mythbusters did really carries much weight with what we've been talking about all along, which is the assumption that yawning is indeed contagious, which I would argue for. But this leads us to another interesting and related website, which is on YouTube, because out of this study, Adam and Jamie tried to launch a worldwide yawn. Yes, so there's a video on YouTube of Adam, one of the hosts of Mythbusters. If you Google YouTube, yawning is contagious, or just go to YouTube and type in yawning is contagious, there's a video of Adam yawning. And the idea is that if everyone watched this video, then they would start to yawn because it's contagious, and then the people around them would be set off, and instead of, you know, a wave at a baseball game, you'd have a yawn, a worldwide yawn. Just another piece in the puzzle towards world peace, I think, really. So there's that website on yawning, which is an interesting aside, and then there's some more dedicated yawning websites that are just, I think, dedicated to the joy of the yawn. And they're also related to the yawning in animals. So if you want to see lots of animals in the midst of yawning, these are still photographs of people and animals yawning. One is called the Gallery of Yawns, and it's pet rats. It's these people who have these pet rats who they clearly love a lot, and they put up photographs of them doing all these yawns. And these rats really go for it. They seem to yawn at the drop of a hat. The website is www.dapper.com.au. Or if you Google yawning pet rats, I'm sure you'll catch it. If you want to find out what different animals and people look like when they yawn, you can go to the very aptly named yawn.gallery.com. sites.sytes, that's sites but with a Y, .org. And it's just a webpage with all these little still photos of people yawning. And then there's this that I found when I was Googling for the show that I thought was pretty much unrelated but still kind of funny, which is www.boredagainchristian.com. So in my search for yawning and boring stuff, there's this person who's actually really fed up with the current state of Christian rock, and so they've created this website called boredagainchristian.com, and in the great search for more stimulating and what they call post-contemporary and truly alternative Christian music. So that's my yawning websites for you. I hope you enjoy the whirlwind tour. And before I leave you, I will plug, of course, Café Scientifique, which is a forum that my co-host Anne is very much involved in co-organizing, and that we set up together when I was back in Vancouver a few years ago. And Café Sci is a free event. It happens at the Railway Club pretty much on the third Tuesday of every month, where an expert in some particular science or technology topic is invited down to give sort of a 20-minute, half-hour talk. And people enjoy some great food, some great drinks, and then talk with the researcher and talk amongst themselves. And it's a really fun, stimulating night. So this month, on Tuesday, September 18th, Café Scientifique has invited Professor Stephen Ward to come down. And I think this is going to be really interesting because Professor Ward is head of University of British Columbia's Journalism School, and he's going to give a talk called The Informed Science Journalist, How Much Science Do You Need to Know? Which is interesting for those of us who are not science journalists because, of course, we read the science journalism, and it would be good to feel confident in the people who are communicating our science to us. So if you want to know what science journalists are expected to know, head on down. As I said, the Railway Club, it starts at 7:30, totally free. If you like, the food and drink, as I said, is pretty tasty, so you can head on down a bit earlier before that and enjoy some noshing. And I think also there's a, well, I know there's an email list that you can sign up for if you're interested in monthly updates about what is going on. So that would be it for the show. This is my science project. I have been your host, Julia, and I'm going to leave you with a song called Rock Formation. It's by a group called, appropriately enough, The Yawning Man. Anne is back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, and until I'm talking to you in 4 weeks from now, take care and enjoy your weekend.
Brittany.
Hit me, baby, one more time.
Xtina.
What a girl wants, what a girl needs, whatever makes me happy sets you free.
Mariah.